Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 12, Text 17 and 18. Daksha Janma Pracheto Vyas. Tatputrinam ca santahi Yato devasura naras Tiryam naga kagadaya Aksha janma prachito vyas Tatputrinam ca santahi yato devasura naras tiryam nagha kagadaya aksha janma prachito vyas tatputrinam ca santahi Yato devasura naras Tiryam naga kagadaya Dakshadama prachetavyas Tatputrinam ca santahi Daksha-janma, the birth of Daksha, Prachetobhya, from the Prachetas, Tatputrinam, of his daughters, Cha, and Santahi, the progeny, Yata, from which, Deva Asura Nara, the demigods, demons and human beings. Tiryak naga kaga adya. The animals, serpents, birds and other species. The rebirth of Prajapati Daksha as the son of the Prachetas and the progeny of Daksha's daughters, who initiated the races of demigods, demons, human beings, animals, serpents, birds, and so on. All this is described. Can you repeat, please? The rebirth of Prajapati Daksha as the son of the Prachetas and the progeny of Daksha's daughters, who initiated the races of demigods, demons, human beings, animals, serpents, birds, and so on, all this is described. Text 18. We could do it together. Kastrayasya janma nidhanam. O Brahmanas, also recounted are the births and deaths of Ritasura and of Diti's sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, as well as the history of the greatest of Diti's descendants, the exalted soul Prahlada. O Magyana Chirmanasya Gananjana Shalakaya Sakshin Tanamina Tasma Shri Dhamma. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishkam Sakshan Yedabhusavaya Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dalari Swaparantita. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dekar Radha Shri Vasa. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, everybody. So we're at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Amala Purana, the ripened fruit of Vedic literature. It is sweet every part. The statement when it was touched by the mouth of Sukadev Goswami, it became even sweeter. I remember when I was a kid, we had lots of mango trees, and then the parrots would come and bite the mangoes. And then it would ripen faster, and then it would fall to the ground. And that mango is actually twice as sweet as the regular mango, because it's been bitten by the beak of the parrot. It has something to do. So it's stated that when this Bhagavatam is touched by the lips of Sukadev Goswami, he's compared like to a parrot-like. See? The Bhagavatam becomes sweeter. So Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam deals with 10 topics. And we have gone through all of them. Now we're just getting a summary of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, and here the topics of part of creation has been explained here. Part of creation and then the demons. In one sense, they are part of the creative process also. So Prajapati Daksha, he is a progenitor of mankind. That means he is one of the origin of the human race. Well, not only the human race, but all the species in life, all the beings within this material world, Prajapati Daksha. In the first Manvantara, that was the first day of Brahma, Swayambhuva Manu was the ruler. Daksha was born from the hand of Brahma. But in this Manvantara, he's not born from Brahma, but he's born from Maricha and the Prachetas. These are also like progenitor. But there's a beautiful story how Maricha came about, the mother of Daksha. It stated that there was a sage called Kandu. There's one called Kandu, and also there's another personality called Pandu. But we're not talking about Pandu. He also had similar situation with his second wife. But this sage Kandu, he was about to receive Divya Gyan, or he was about to become self-realized. And so Indra became very scared of him, because Indra thought that he would take over his position of king of heaven. Just like how there was another great personality called Nahusha. Nahusha was an earthly king, but he was promoted to heaven, where he actually took over the kingdom of Indra. So Indra gets very paranoid about when these personalities start to develop great powers. And so Kandu was, it stated in the summer he would meditate in the sun. And sometimes they would have like a ring of fire also in the summer. In the winter, he would meditate in the pool of mud. And in, no, that's in the rainy season. And in the winter, he would wet his clothes and meditate outside. That great was the austerity that Kandu was doing. And so India was very scared. Well, this Kandu, he would become very powerful and he would take over my position. So he sent an apsara called Pramlochi. Let's see if I get the name correct. Pramlocha. This was a beautiful apsara. And Pramlocha, she went by the ashram of Kandu and she was walking around and singing. She was like singing nice songs, very melodious, you know. So Kandu was wondering, what is happening here, you know? This sage alone, and then here's this beautiful nightingale voice. So he's wondering what's happening. And then she started to pick flowers around. So Kandu said, what are you doing? She said, I'm here to serve you. And so within a short time, it stated, within a short time, Kandu got allured by Pramlocha. And he took her into an ashram. And it stated that Kandu spent a long time in that ashram. He never actually came out. And then one day, he came out from the ashram. That was in the evening. And his Pramlocha says, what are you going to do? He says, it's getting very late and I have to go and do my prayers. So Pramlocha was one who said, Kandu says, the day is getting very late and I have to go and do my prayers. And Pramlocha says, what day are you speaking of? He says, you came in this morning and now it's evening, so I have to go do my prayers. Pramlocha says, your day is a day of many years. Kandu said, what? How many years? She said, 1,600 years, 6 months and 3 days we spent together. Kandu said, what? I thought it was just a day. This is, I don't know how much of you have heard of the story. It's part of it is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, not the whole detail, but a little part. So it stated that Kandu realized that he was allured by Marisha. But because he willingly accepted her, he did not curse her. And he said, go back to heaven. I would not curse you, but just go back. And it stated as she flew in the sky, the wetness from her body fell on the trees. And with the blowing of the winds, it encapsulated that wetness and it became a fetus. And Marisha was born. So sometimes you hear that Marisha is the daughter of the trees. See, you hear Marisha is the daughter of the trees. This is how it happened. See, that from the wetness of her body, it fell into the tree, and then it became a fetus, and Marisha was born, and she was protected by the trees. So Srimad Bhagavatam, the real Srimad, so our story states here that the Daksha was the son of the Prachetas and Marishas. So the Prachetas, they were meditating under the water, in the ocean, for a long time. And when they came out, the whole earth was overtaken by forests, thick forests. And the Prachetas got very angry and they cursed the forest to burn up. And immediately, fire started to take place. But Soma is the lord of the trees. Soma is the lord of vegetation. And he did not like what was going on. So he went and stopped the Prachetas. He said that these are living entities and they are part of this creation. and you should not kill them. So Soma stopped the Prachetas, but then he decided to give Marichas in marriage to the Prachetas, because Maricha is the daughter of the trees, in compensation for them stopping from harming the trees. So he gave Maricha to the Prachetas. And he said, and it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, with the combined semen of the Prachetas, then Daksha was born. See? Daksha was born. And then, as the story goes, first Daksha got 10,000 sons. 10,000 sons. They were called the Hariyashas. And Narad says, these boys are innocent boys. Why make them waste their time in sense gratification? I would teach them self-realization. And Narad dissuaded them from whatever else they were going to do and taught them the process of self-realization. And these 10,000 sons went their own way. So then Daksha got another 1,000 sons. And they were called the Savalashvas. So the Savalashvas, they were also planning to go and travel the earth and see what was going on. But then Narad also had the same plan, and he met them. And he cursed the Savalashvas, he taught them self-realization. And when Daksha knew about this, Daksha was very angry. Daksha was very angry, and Daksha cursed Narad, that you would have to wander throughout the world and you would have no place for residence. And Narad took that as a boon and he became the great personality he is. See? And so then Daksha says, well, this is not gonna work. These sons are not gonna work. So he decided to get daughters. And he got 60 daughters. And these 60 daughters would progenate the whole universe. Not only the earth, but all the planets in the world, the gods, the demigods, the demons, the apsaras, the gandharvas, the cities, the ghosts, the goblins, rakshas, yakshas, everything were created by the daughters of Daksha. And so if you bear with me a little bit, I would give you some of their names and who came from them. So it stated Daksha gave 10 of his daughters to Dharma, 17 to Kashyapa Muni, 27 to Soma, 2 to Angira, 2 to Krishashva, and 2 to Bhuta. That is 60 daughters. The 27 daughters to Soma became the moons, celestial planets. The 27 daughters of Daksha, that married Soma. Those of Kashyapa are as follows. Aditi was the first one, and from her came the Adityas. The Adityas are the demigods, like Indra, Vayu, and so forth. They are the 12 Adityas. And then the other daughter was Diti. And from Diti came the Daityas. Daityas and the demons, like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and so forth. Then there was Danu. And from Danu came the Danavas. They were also a type of demons also, the Danavas. And there were then Arista. From Arista came the Gandharvas. From Muni came the Apsaras. From Surasa came the Rakshasas and evil spirits. From Krodavasya came the serpents and mosquitoes. From Surabi came the cows and buffaloes. From Kashta came the horses. From Sarama came the wild animals, wild ferocious animals like lions and tigers and jaguars and so forth. From Tamra came the birds and the eagles and the vultures. From Timi came the water creatures. and fishes, the aquatic creatures. From Ila came the trees and creepers. So this is how so many of the creatures came about. And then it stated from some of Kashyapa Datos, some other beings came. Like from Shuki came the parrots and the owls. From Shani came the hawks. From Vashi came the ospreys. From Gridi came the vultures. Sugridi came the pigeons. Suchi came the crane swans. Venata, Garuda, and Aruni. Arun came Jatayu. Surasa, the mother of the snakes, and Kadru came the cobras, Shesha, Vasuki, and Daksha. This part of this is within the Mahabharata also, with Kadru and her sister Vinata. They had a great conflict. So all the beings came about through this process. And this is the creative process of how life came into this world and into the universe. But if you go on the internet and check how life came about, it will tell you through these bog of scientists that life came about through evolution. From matter, there's statements, a process called abiogenesis. It stated that life came about from dead matter. And gradually it evolved into what we have today. See? So and so this has been taught in school, and when the students study this, then what they become? Atheists. Presently now, like during the time of creation, there is one atheist or two atheists. Hiranyakashipu and his brother Hiranyaksha. They were the two atheists. But now there are millions of atheists. Millions of atheists, and they're trying to spread their doctrine of evolution within this world. So it's important for us to know the process of creation and how it took place. I mean, there's more detail. This is just part of it, really, but there's other details where from the subtle came the gross, see? And then from the gross, and so forth. Then Lord Brahma divided himself into Swayambhuva Manu and what's the name of his wife? Shatarupa. And then came Priyavrata and Akuti, Prasuti, and so forth. See? So this is the process of creation. And every being came through this creative process, not through the process of evolution. But as these children go to school, they will be taught this. And then they can also be misled. So I have a verse here for these kids here. This is from Prahalad Maharaj. It's stated, Kaumara Acharya Pragyo Dharman Bhagavatam Pragyo. It stated, an intelligent person should use the human form from the beginning of life. See, like this is so nice, all these little children are here. See? So Prahlad Maharaj was speaking to his 5-year-old friends. From the beginning of life, to practice devotional service. If a slight amount of sincere devotional service, can give one complete perfection. So this is from the great Prahlad Maharaj. So Srimad Bhagavatam, the verse continued to explain that after Daksha and his daughters, the next verse explains about Vritasura. The origin of Vritasura, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and the great Prahlad. That's the second verse came about. And so, sometimes it's good to know these stories because you don't know what you might be placed on. Like a few weeks I went to Orlando, we went to D-Land. And the Swami there was three of us, myself, Keshava, and another devotee called Haridas. So he told Haridas, you do the arti, Keshava, you lead the kirtan. And he told me, to give the Bhagavatam class. No notice, nothing really. So I said, what is this? You know? So anyhow, I went to the podium and I was thinking, I was wondering, well, what is this? I don't know what's the topic, anything. So when I checked the topic, it was the passing away of Bhishmadev. And I know that topic nicely. So it was easy. But the point is, it's important for know these topics of Bhagavatam, because you don't know when you might place in a situation. Then another week I went up north to upstate New York. The devotees had a program. Suddenly they asked me to speak. They didn't indicate to me, well, you know, you'll be speaking or something. Then another week I went to New York City. They had another program there. And they asked me to speak again, without any notice. So it's important for us to know the topics in Srimad Bhagavatam, to pay attention, so that we can relate it back later on. We can preach to the world, enlighten them, and so this would be beneficial for the Lord. Because the Lord says that he that preaches my glories and this teachings of mine is most dear to me. In the Bhagavad Gita. So this is our mission. And so now we'll go through the pastime of Ritasura. So how this came about? It stated that Indra was with the demigods associating. And suddenly their spiritual master Brihaspati came. But it stated that Indra was so proud and puffed up of his opulence that he paid no heed to his guru, Brihaspati. And so Brihaspati left silently and he went away. He hid himself. And then the demigods, their strength actually came from their guru, see? And it stated that they started to lose their opulence and started to become weakened. And then what happened? The demons, they're the rivals, right? The demons start to say, now is the time. They start to follow Sukracharya even more, because Sukracharya is the acharya of the demons. And so the demons start to follow Sukracharya strictly, and they become more powerful than the demigods. You see? And so the demigods didn't like this. I think Indra went and do some tapasya for a year, but that didn't work out well. So what he did, he decided to accept Vishwarupa as the spiritual master. Vishwarupa was the son of Twashta. And so when he accepted Vishwarupa as the spiritual master, Vishwarupa had some lineage with the demons. His mother was from the demon side. So he had some feelings with the demons. So even though he was nice to the demigods, on the side, he would be nice to the demons. And so the demigods didn't like this, especially Indra. And then what Indra did, Indra killed him. Indra killed Vishwarupa. And I guess most of you know the story. Because of the sins of killing Vishwarupa, he had to be held. And so the trees took some of his sin, or I don't know if he actually forced it onto them. The trees took some of his sins, the women took some of his sins, the water took some of his sins, and the earth took some of his sins. For the trees, it stated that when they're cut, because each one of them took quarter of Indra's sin. So quarter, they become the whole sins gone. Everyone took. So it stated for the trees, they when they're cut, they would grow back, or the limbs would grow back. That was the benediction. But the downside was the sap they produced would not be good for consumption. Maybe except for the maple tree. You know the maple tree, right? You could use the sap. But anyhow, that was the curse and that was the boon. For the earth, if it's been dug, then it would refill itself. It would refill itself. And the downside was part of it became desert. and no life would be able to sustain. See, like that. And, well, for women, we know, they got their monthly cycle. But the upside for them is that they could engage in such gratification throughout the month, except during their monthly. See, so the course was, but during their monthly, then they're not supposed to touch anyone and do stuff and so forth. That was the downside. But the upside, they could engage in sense gratification throughout the month until then. That was the benediction. And then in water, it stated that when something is added to water, the volume increases. But then the downside was it produces bubbles, and that should not be used. That is sinful, to drink bubbles. So that's all. So anyhow, so that happened, and so Indra's sin was practically gone, but Visharupa father was not satisfied, and they decided to make a sacrifice, a great sacrifice. And then from that sacrifice, a great demon came. That a great demon came from it. And his name was Ritasura. See? Ritasura. And he was very powerful. He stated he was practically touched the sky. How tall he was. This is another thing, and it's important. Sometimes we don't pay attention in Bhagavatam, but it's stated, when it's stated that the demons head are actually touching the sky, that it's true. It's not a metaphorical language there. It's literal. See, because it's also stated the beams in the other ages were huge. Even the trees, they were so tall. See, during the creative process, when they were speaking about that in Jambu Dweep. That was it, the mango tree, the jambu tree. It was so many huge and as tall. See, I mean, that is for real. So all beings were larger those times. So it's stated that Ritasura was a huge demon, and he was creating havoc. And then this great fight started with him and Indra. It took a very, very long time, and then Indra would eventually kill him, vanquish him. And that was the end of Ritasura. Then there is some other demons we have to deal about. Also recounted are the births and deaths of Ritasura and of Diti's sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, as well as the history of the greatest of Diti's descendants, the exalted soul Prahalada. So we touch upon all the other verse and after Ritasura. So we have Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. I guess most of you know the story, how it went. But it's stated that Diti was on a special mood one day. She was in a mood to copulate. See? And it stated that Diti was holding Kapashi and calling him, time for us to mate. But Kashyapa, understanding the time, he says that this is not the right time. And what he says, that Lord Shiva and the demons are passing through now. And if you were to copulate now, then the demons go and take birth at this time. They're looking for a time to take birth. But by, what you should say, fate, you know, whatever, Diti could not help herself. And so she forced Kapasya into a copulation at that inauspicious time. And it stated that the demons were born. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. the two great demons. Hiranyaksha. The story goes that he was such a powerful demon that he would challenge everyone in sight. Everyone was afraid of him. And he went into the water, he challenged Varuna. And Varuna said, I am so old that I am not the right one to fight, but you would get your match soon. And then we know the story of Lord Varaha. The earth had fallen into the Garbhodakashaya ocean. Lord Varaha went in there in the form of a boar, took up the earth, and Hiranyaksha was challenging him. So when the Lord placed the earth on it in its orbit, Hiranyaksha started the fight with Varaha. And we know that the fight went for a long time, and the Lord allowed it. Because really the Lord wanted this fight also. That was part why Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha came about. Because the Lord allowed him to become demon, which would shorten the stay and walk. And also the Lord wanted a nice fight with him. You see? And so Hiranyaksha and the Lord were fighting, and sometimes the Lord mace would fall from his hand and so forth. So many different sustenance. And then at the end the Lord would hit him behind his neck and vanquish him. And then the story of Hiranyakashipu. He performed tapasya for thousands of years. So when he was performing tapasya, the demons, the demigods, they took away his wife, and they were ill-treating her, and they were going to take her to the wherever, the heavenly planets, and torture her or whatever. And then Narad intervened. When Narad intervened, he said that within the womb of this lady is a great devotee of the Lord, and so you should treat her well. See? And so Prahlad would take birth. And then we know Hiranyakashipu got great boons from Brahma. He will not die in the day or the night. He will not die by weapons. He will not die by man or beast, day and night, indoors, outdoors, and so forth. And he was oppressing everyone, the demigods. In fact, he had situated himself in such a position that everyone thought he was God. And he was actually teaching that to the sons of Sukracharya actually were teaching everyone that Hiranyakashipu is God. He wanted everyone to know that. And so when Prahlad was in school, he would always doubt this teaching. He would say, no, that he's not God. Because he was taught divine knowledge by Narad within the womb of his mother, Diti. And so Prahlad, he went through a lot of hardship with his father, Hiranyakashipu. He tried to kill him with his sword. He threw him off a mountain cliff. He tried to boil him in hot oil, trample him with elephant, so forth, so many things. But Prahlad finally came out, and then we know the story of where the Lord came as Lord Narsingadev. The Lord appeared within the pillow as Lord Narsingadev, and he killed the demon Hiranyakashipu. But Prahlad Maharaj, he was such a great devotee of the Lord. He left so many wonderful verses within the Bhagavatam. I'll recite a few of the verses. It stated, Materna Krishna Parata Satova Mito Vipadyate Griha Pratanam. Because of their uncontrolled senses, people too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Nati vidu swarta gatim hi vishnum, durasya ye bahir artha manina. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similar blind man, cannot understand the goal of life is to return back to Godhead. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into the ditch, material men are bound by fruitive labor and continue to suffer the threefold miseries. Naivod vijay para durat yaya vaitara ranyas twad vira gayana mahamrita magna chita. O Lord, I am not afraid of material life. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness. So these are some of the sayings and teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, and there were many more. He taught the sons of the demons. It stated that the sons of the demons liked Prahlad so much that they would always listen to his teachings. So I would stop here if there's any comment or question. I'll try to answer. State the day, Muni.
I had this thought that passed through my mind. And that was, at one point you were talking about we should be prepared at any moment to speak about the Bhagavad Gita. Right? You said that at one point. And you were saying how it's important for the devotees at any moment to be prepared to speak about the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
But the thought that, you know, you talk about you went here, you went there, and spoke spontaneously. But then the thought that came to my mind is that the essential purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to promote the culture of bhakti. And that's really not dependent on cultural, whatever you want to call them, you know, these little rituals, many of them which aren't really emphasized in Bhagavatam pastimes or in Prabhupada or Lord Chaitanya's outreach. So that was a thought that passed through my mind.
Yeah.
And then I had two parts to this. And then another part, you seem to somehow, as an alternative to this perception of all these rituals as being essential, you said that somehow we don't believe in evolution. And it's atheistic. But I have a quote from Prabhupada here that he seemed to use a lot of arguments, and this would seem to complicate that. And this was in Shyama Sundar and Prabhupada's talk focused on how to handle that theory. And Shyama Sundar is saying, but I want to understand that the theory about the theory of evolution is, and then Prabhupada interjected, theory of evolution we accept. You know, this is just, they're discussing how to deal with it intellectually. Shyama Sundar, from simple forms of life, more complex forms evolve. Prabhupada, yes, that's all right, but they are all existing still. They are not extinct. That is the point. This continues. Shyama Sundar, all right, but on this planet, now if we could examine this planet, Prabhupada, again, you come to this planet, why are you sticking to this planet? So that seems to complicate the simplistic Christian fundamentalist knee-jerk critique of evolutionary theory, from a Puranic perspective.
Yeah, so,
I guess what strikes me is this critique of modern society and this promotion of Bhagavatam is a little bit, perhaps could be more complex than just some knee-jerk reaction based on some simplistic interpretation of Hindu culture in South America or Christian fundamentalist perspective
context. Your point is well taken. We have to, like I just explained, how the creative process took place. It's explained clearly how all these beings came about. With Chamasundar and Srila Prabhupada were, you know, maybe he was just want to accommodate him already. But he knew the process of how all beings came about. It's explained clearly within the Srimad Bhagavatam, how actually every life came about, form by form. You see?
Yeah,
so, but let me
he's trying to accommodate Chamasundar, I would digress, because they're trying to have an intellectual discourse how he felt we should deal with this thing.
But you have to understand that...
Why wasn't he accommodating Hindu fundamentalists when he was talking to them?
At the beginning of ISKCON, really, Srila Prabhupada had to tolerate so many different things with the devotees. They might have some different ideas, but so he might say, yes, you know, evolution like this. But according to Srimad Bhagavatam, life didn't evolve. Life came about through life, through the creative process, and that's clear here. The other point you were making about Bhagavatam is to cultivate bhakti, which is, that's the ultimate goal. But at the same time, we cannot deny these other parts of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam deals with 10 topics, you see? Bhagavatam deals with 10 topics, and all these topics come together to heighten bhakti, or they're all related to bhakti. So if all these stories with Hiranyakashipu and Vritasura and so forth, they're all related in this bhakti path. They're all related, connected to the Lord, you see? So that's how Bhagavatam does it, really. It's not that, you're going to give Bhagavatam, you're going to speak bhakti all the time. If the topic is about something else, you have to speak about that.
Right. Bhagavatam's focus, focusing from the pastimes in the Bhagavatam. Again, it's that there's a certain understanding of Bhagavatam, and there's a certain understanding about other things, and you know, but here we see Prabhupada didn't have such a simplistic, it's one or the other. And this conversation about Darwin was focused on having a disciplined response for, you know, sophisticated, cultured people. It's not like he's accepting evolution. I don't know what your understanding of the theory is, but it's not like he's accepting it full package. It's either some atheist interpretation or some simplistic understanding of the Bhagavatam.
This part was.
What I always understood when Prabhupada talked about evolution, and when he was agreeing, he agreed to the evolution of consciousness. The apartments, the residential quarters were already there, and it's not like one species then evolved to another.
The conscious being
evolved from one place to the next, higher up.
That's right. Very good point. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada explained that. He says that not physically, but spiritually, you could say, that the ant moved to the rat, to the mouse, to whatever, like that, up. You know, so in a spiritual sense, he was...
Yeah, again, nobody's denying he said these other things, too. That's just the point. He said many things. In this exchange, Shyamatun has spoken, the understanding is from simple life forms, more complex evolve, you know, and Prabhupada, this is how Prabhupada chose to respond. Now, in Prabhupada's mind, now to us, that might say, what do you mean? He must have not really meant it. But in Prabhupada's mind, he did mean it. And it was all consistent in his mind how he saw the world from a Puranic perspective. He's not endorsing anything the scientists say is absolute because it's based on conditional perception. But this is how he chose to respond, as opposed to very simplistic, black and white, some ritualistic is absolute and something else is irrelevant. He seemed to have a far more encompassing vision.
So you feel that we should accommodate the concept of...
No, we should accommodate bhakti, and that's what Prabhupada's doing in these exchanges. It's not that is bhakti
that
and that's not.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying about the point on the evolutionary concept. I mean, are you saying that we should accept the concept to some degree? I mean, I accept that that all beings are devolving. Like in Satyuga, beings were much bigger. And now they're so small, and they're getting small. By the end of Kali Yuga, we'll be getting very, very small. That's what I understand the scripture.
Evolution can
be similar. The concept can be, the scientists can actually see some changes there, but they misinterpret the change. Instead of beings getting bigger, they're getting smaller. So instead of saying evolution, we should say devolution.
I would emphasize that, you know, again, it's not black, white, right, wrong, this, that. It's not like somehow in our intelligence, our mind, we can encompass everything Krishna has the potentiality to do. And yes, I'm not saying that one is, it has to be one and not the other. And neither am I saying anything that can be perceived through sense perception is definitive, because even the scientists will say that in their sober moments. It's all tentative knowledge. But what I am saying is Prabhupada philosophically didn't have a problem using that argument. It wasn't a problem for him. He's rather emphasizing that all forms within a Purana concept of cosmos is available for spiritual level, you know. That's the real point, because that's the whole point of the conditional world. Just to, you know, but time, space, how things manifest on Earth, he seems to not, that's not the essential point for him. He says, why are you worried about this neighborhood? So I'm not saying these other arguments aren't relative and concerns aren't there, but I'm wondering what's the essential point and what's not the essential point. What's a time and space argument? What's a Siddhantic principle?
Okay. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Sorry, Mataji. Okay. I didn't see your hand.
I believe that Darwin also himself admitted that there was no fossil evidence, so there was no actual proof of his evolution, theory of evolution. And he said, actually, there's just one big problem with my theory, is that there's no evidence of intermediary forms.
Yeah, you know, this concept actually came up to accommodate the atheists, really, because the atheists, they're disgusted with the creationists, and so the two great theories are formed. Can I speak, please? Two great theories are formed, the theory of evolution and the Big Bang theory. The Big Bang theory explains how the world came about, and evolution explains how life. So the atheists are comfortable with those concepts, and so they're trying to spread it. But we know that is not how life came about, or the world came about. Thakur Prabhu wants to say something again. And those that are listening, please bear with us.
Hare Krishna. Well, there's also intelligent design, but that's another thing. I remember years ago there was a whole issue of Back to Godhead dedicated to evolution, and I was really eager to send it to my brother. Two or three were the devotee scientists pointing out flaws in evolution, but in a scientific way, kind of like Sariputta with progress. And I sent those articles separately, because then there was an article straight from the Bhagavatam on how all these different species came from these different ladies in Daksha. And of course, we accept that on faith. But I was wondering, how do we present the combination to, you know, to the Western mind?
We don't have to say that the cow came from Surabhi and the snake came from Tirma and so forth, really. But you could just explain the creative process, you know, and, you know, you make it simple and clear for them, but you don't have to go and, you know, mention all these names and everything, how, you know, like that. But we can explain that it came through the process of creation, everything. And nothing, I mean, life never came from nothing. I mean, it's not possible. If that was possible, then the scientists would be able to create so many life, you know, but it's not possible. So, anyhow, good point taken. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.